people want things that are unique, that are talking points, you know, the conversation starters with their friends. And that I think they're tired of sort of the sameness of proper taste or good taste. I think they're willing to take more chances on sort of the oddities, because that's what really gives life to a home.
Welcome to House Guest with me, Carol Annett, interiors editor at Country and Townhouse magazine. Here I chat to those clever creatives behind the houses, hotels and brands you see in glossy magazines like ours. Guests include interior designers and architects, as well as celebrities dipping their toe into the world of decorating. My house guest today is Anthony Barzilay-Freund of First Dibs. He is the editorial director and director of fine art at the online marketplace connecting design lovers to lighting, furniture, art and fashion. First Dibs has been recognised for pushing the antiques business into the 21st century, and it's become an incredibly important tool, not only for professional interior designers, but for us armchair lovers of all kinds of decorating. Tony, you must get to see the buying trends before anybody else. What's whetting the appetite of the design world? Tell us a little bit about that.
That is the amazing thing about working at First Dibs, is understanding how tastes are changing and shifting. But I'd say as a journalist too, it's sometimes I feel it's my responsibility to share things that we find interesting on the site and that people may not be looking for or caring about, but that they should know about, because it's, it's important. You know, the sort of material culture has a long history of wonderful things, some of which are in vogue and some of which have never been in vogue or have fallen out of vogue. And so 18th century French furniture may have had seen a peak, you know, 20 something years ago, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't still be talking about and celebrating it, because it's so important. Like politics, I mean, history is everything. If you don't know your history, you don't understand where you are today. If you don't know about great fine furniture makers from centuries ago, you don't understand where the hot young contemporary designer is coming from. So it's an editor's job to not only just reflect the trends and see the trends, but to show people things that they may not care about or know that they should care about.
So in a way, you're also guiding the consumer, or maybe kind of opening the eyes of the consumer, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, you may sort of go on with an idea that you're buying one thing, and then it may kind of open up your eyes. Oh, so maybe there's this, or maybe there's this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you would talk to people and they'd say, oh, First Dibs, you know, I'm looking for sconces, you know, for my front hall. And I went on at 11 right before I went to bed. And the next thing I knew, it was 2 a.m. and I'd gone down a black hole and discovered so many things. And I think that was, you know, that is the beauty of First Dibs. But I think also, you know, we've created a search. This is, you know, the marketplace. Our product team has created search capabilities that make sort of wandering, roaming, and discover the sense of surprise and discovery really wonderful. But also they've created all sorts of tools to, if you have a very specific search, you can go in there and it's very easy and rationalized. So there's sort of two ways to approach the site. One is where we will guide you into, you know, you're looking again for an Eames chair. We will guide you into that Eames chair and show you every option, every price point, every locale of seller. But you're looking for an Eames chair, we'll show you other things. Well, look at what Jens Riesum was doing down here. And then you'll wander into Scandinavia, away from America, mid-century. And then you'll possibly see a 19th century English arts and crafts chair. And so you'll wander and learn. So yes, we guide you in sort of very directed ways, concise ways. And we also guide you in ways where you can just sort of wander through a world of beauty.
So, Tony, tell us about when you see spikes in sales, because that must be very exciting.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's not my objective. Creating content is not to necessarily sell stuff. We really are here to educate and kind of contextualize all the stuff that's on the site. But what I think is really useful is, especially when we profile a style setter, we love to ask them, whether it's a celebrity or an prominent interior designer or someone from the fashion world, we always like to ask them for their quick picks at the end. And so we actually show items from the website that they respond to that they love. And I've asked them to give a sentence, just a brief sentence on why they love it. Because I think, you know, we have millions of pieces on the site. They're wonderful, but it's sometimes hard for, you know, civilians, as I like to call people like you and me, to find that wonderful stuff, our consumer audience. So I think curation of any sort really helps. And if there's somebody you admire, whose eye you admire, it's nice to hear. See, not only see what they like, but hear why they like it. And super popular stories that we've done recently are on Jenna Lyons, who's the fashion, she's a huge fashion figure in America. She had headed J. Crew for many years. I don't know if in the UK she has the same sort of status.
Yeah, she's a pretty big name, from J. Crew, really.
Well, she's a lifelong fan of First Dibs, and she loves design and is actually doing things now in her career that are design focused, not fashion focused. So we did a story. She let us into her apartment in Soho, which has been published elsewhere. It's fantastic. But she really walked us through specific pieces in her apartment, some of which she bought, many of which she bought on First Dibs, but not all of them. And then we had links out. And, you know, she has very, you know, a wonderful eye. She loves Italian light, for instance. So, like, we could see direct spikes in traffic toward our, you know, offerings in Italian lighting, thanks to Jenna sort of talking about why she loves that stuff. And, you know, similarly, well, we did a story just a few weeks ago on a house that Kelly Hoppen did for Boy George in London. And it's got a lot of very quirky pieces in it, artwork that he's collected, bold, bright artwork. You know, there's sort of this Gothic revival pieces. And we saw, again, in those categories, huge upticks in traffic. So I think people do love to take their cues from well-known tastemakers, because it's not always, you know, so obvious what the value of a piece may be.
I'm fascinated as to Boy George choosing Kelly Hoppen. I wouldn't have thought that that was his, the kind of aesthetic he was after. Golly gosh, well, there you go.
Apparently, he'd lived in the house for years and years and hadn't really done much with it. And he, through mutual friends, he was invited to her house for dinner.
She's a very engaging lady. I can imagine, if once they met, then I can imagine that, yeah, because she is, she's very charismatic.
She's lovely.
And you are an absolute godsend for interior designers. I mean, you know, you wonder really what interior designers did before places like First Dibs, because you just open up a whole new, you know, an encyclopedia of offerings, really. I mean, it's quite extraordinary. And I know that you have a massive database of interior designers that use the tool.
We do, and we like to celebrate them in the pages of Introspective, our weekly digital online magazine, because they really are such incredible ambassadors. They make the case for why these things that we're selling on the site can be, you know, room enhancing and life enhancing. And I like to think of what we do as sort of this virtuous circle, right? We have a marketplace of thousands of dealers, and it's the dealers, the sellers, whose eyes, you know, it's their skill, talent, and finding great material, celebrating it, presenting it, curating it, offering it, that we all count on. You know, it's the First Dibs is only as good as our dealers. And, you know, I would say it's also true that interior designers are only as good as the dealers. You know, the dealers open up a world of incredible pieces of furniture and objects and art that they can then use as their raw materials to create incredible spaces. So they're kind of, you know, we bring the dealers and the designers together. And then by doing stories, we're also showing consumers, who are, you know, sort of the third part of the First Dibs ecosystem, how you can incorporate these things, why they matter, why something that you might think is a little funky or strange is actually going to add a lot of character and style to your home. And so they're inspired to then go to our sellers. And so it's this, you know, virtuous circle where they all feed each other.
Yeah. Are you surprised by the amount of money that people are prepared to deal with in an online environment? I mean, I was looking at a Van Cleef & Arpels 1970s necklace that was sold for $400,000, you know, set of brutalist dining chairs, $82,000. I mean, it's an extraordinary amount of money. to be buying essentially something that you haven't seen.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, when I met the founder 20 something years ago, I thought he was crazy if he thought anybody was ever going to spend a lot of money, you know, on buying fine antiques online. I was the crazy one. I should have said, can I invest in your company and will you take me on? So, you know, that's the sort of mindset that people won't spend a lot of money on luxury items digitally. You know, certainly he proved that to be not true back in 2000. And it's certainly like we've continued, First Dibs has continued to prove that every day. And you know, I mean, it's not just First Dibs, you know, the luxury e-commerce, you know, has boomed.
Sorry, Tony, can I ask you also about your, you know, you talk about meeting the founder, but when did you get properly involved and what was it that piqued your interest in going to First Dibs?
Yeah, I had met him in 2000, sort of kept running into him and just was interested as a journalist and as a design lover, was interested in First Dibs and its success and watching it grow. Because as I said, I thought he was crazy when he presented this to me, but I also thought he was incredibly charismatic and smart. So I, through my work as a design culture journalist, I knew a lot of dealers. I knew the high-end design antiques dealers, and they were on the, I would ask them about it, the ones who were on the site, and they would tell me they were having success. And then I would go to a dinner party, maybe a fancy dinner party, and the woman to my left would start to, you know, First Dibs would come up in conversation and she'd talk about how she was addicted to it and how she had bought this and that from them. So I knew that it was working and I knew that it was a success. And when I left my last magazine job at a time when I was sort of thinking traditional print journalism might not be in the healthiest spot, I ran into Michael Bruno, who was our founder. He said, come in on Monday, and there I was. He also initially wanted me, I had edited a magazine called Art and Auction, which is a high-end art market magazine. He had long wanted to start an art vertical on the site. He sold furniture, and at that point, they were selling jewelry and fashion, but we had not launched a fine art vertical, even though a lot of antiques dealers wanted to. A lot of our furniture dealers wanted to sell their art on the site, and he was insistent that he wanted to reach out to traditional art galleries, and he felt that he should create a space for that. He knew I knew that space, so I helped him launch the art division and started doing content, and then was overseeing all the content within a year or so.
And how is First Dibs planning to evolve, and how do you see the sector of our online marketplace for furniture and art evolving? Do you see it growing?
Oh, well, it is growing. I mean, it's a huge business and we're a big player, but there's still so much market opportunity. And we're always looking to build on that. So, for instance, this past spring, we launched a German language site and a French language site because those are huge markets. We have a lot of sellers in those markets. We are not as well known, though, to the buyers there. So we think that the language has been an impediment. So we launched these sites and we're seeing already growth in those international markets. And you know, we'll hope to expand on that and go into other markets with new languages. It's a big deal to translate a site with 5 million items and all our content, but it's been a big success so far. We're also, we're an e-commerce site. Dealers post things on the site and you can make an offer and buy it. We recently launched an auction functionality where we used to always be described as an online auction site, which we weren't. So it's ironic, and I'd always have to correct people. But now we actually do have collections every few weeks where we launch an auction collection. We bring in often a outside curator to curate it, and we're seeing huge success. I mean, it's only been a couple of months, and it's already accounting for something like 5 or 6% of our sales last month were through the auction. So clearly that's a way that people want to shop, and we never offered them that capability, and now we are. And so I can only see that growing. I mean, this landscape is huge. And as you know, we're 20 something years old, but the people who run this company are constantly growing it and looking at new opportunities to innovate and expand.
I wanted to ask you about the virtual show house that you did. Are you planning to do more of those?
Designer show houses, particularly in America, I mean, the Kip Spade Decorator Show House in New York, and it spawned versions in Dallas and Palm Beach, but there are others. They're hugely popular. Do you have the same?
Well, Chelsea Harbour, that we had one at Design Center Chelsea Harbour in this summer.
I heard it was really nice.
It was absolutely fantastic. And basically everybody brought their A game. I think it was all done very, very quickly. I think the designers had sort of 3 days to put their room together. Mm-hmm. And what was just lovely about it is that each room was so incredibly different. And it was just wonderful because it also, you know, ideas-wise and for inspiration, you walked in there. I mean, I'm doing my own house up in it. You know, there were just so many things that were unexpectedly inspiring. I think that's what I loved about it.
I think that's the appeal of in America for these show houses too. And it's a great showcase for the interior designers to reach a new audience and to explore ideas that they might not be allowed to do with a, you know, because a client would say no. And sometimes they're sort of slightly fantastical. People love them. I have loved, you know, we've done a lot of coverage of these show houses over the years. So we decided in the pandemic, when these show houses had shut down, we decided to create a virtual one. And our assignment was, we asked interior designers to actually, and rather than giving them one house and sort of giving the living room to one person and the dining room and the maid's room upstairs to the young up-and-comer who, you know, usually gets the pantry, they usually get the less nice spaces, but they're also often the most interesting ones. We asked designers to just pick a room from history and redesign it, which, you know, in some cases could have been perceived as sacrilege, but it was so much fun. I have to tell you, it was a ton of work. It was a ton of work for the designers, you know, as real show houses are. Of course, they didn't have to worry about shipping and wallpapering and, you know, all that. But we haven't done it again. I mean, to a large extent, show houses are back now. You know, we're back to in-person events, but it was so much fun. And the designers really did some great pieces. And that still exists on the website. You can find that introspective and see it.
So can I, if I, you know, asking about trends is a horrible thing to kind of load somebody with, but can you see any trends at the moment? I mean, is it still kind of mid-century modern? Is it, you know, how's brown furniture doing? Yeah. Is there anything you can pick up on?
Yeah, I mean, we see mini trends all the time. And in terms of larger trends, yes, mid-century modernism is still huge. It's still a big part of what we're selling. I don't see it going away. I mean, I think whereas you used to see people were just, you know, hoovering up and just doing up entire rooms as period pieces in, you know, circa 1957. Now it's much more of a mix. So iconic mid-century design is still selling very strongly. American, really Scandinavian, Italian, they're all really popular still, but you're not seeing them ending up in rooms that are entirely those sort of timepieces or period pieces. Art Deco, also, just if we're looking back in time, Art Deco remains super strong category for us. People love Deco furniture, the craftsmanship, the luxury. I mean, I think it really skirts both modernism and a kind of old world elegance. So I think in terms of brown furniture, Deco is really where it's at. Brown furniture, like 18th, 19th century furniture, I wish I could report that it was trending. It is definitely, we're seeing more interest in it. We see young designers buying it. I think that often, you know, it's the young designer who's sort of scrappy and actually not scared to go, you know, where tastes are not. And a lot of these antiques, so-called brown furniture, are the market for them has really kind of collapsed. So you can find incredibly beautifully made antiques, brown furniture, you know, for a fraction of the price of the something new would cost. And so I think, you know, designers know value too. And so
it also hits into the whole sort of sustainability kind of repurposing, which I guess is what you guys are all about anyway.
Everything we sell. Yeah, everything we sell. You know, I mean, we do sell new and custom pieces, but even those pieces are often bespoke and from small studios or, you know, custom commissions. So, yeah, I can't think of any greener way of shopping. And when I look at the catalogs for some of these sort of big box, you know, stores that sell so much furniture, and I just think, one, just the landfill of the catalogs themselves, but the landfill of all this sort of disposable furniture that actually all kind of looks very much the same. Which actually makes me think of a trend that we definitely saw during the pandemic, is people were taking more risks. And I think you find that in vintage and antique furniture. They're quirky pieces, you know, pieces with big personality, even things not going so far back in time, but to like Memphis and postmodernism. You know, people wanted surrealism, you know, the Gouffram lips or cactus furniture. People want things that, you know, are unique, that are talking points, you know, the conversation starters with their friends. And that I think they're tired of sort of the sameness of proper taste or good taste. I think they're willing to take more chances on sort of the oddities, because that's what really gives life to a home. And it's, you know, even if it just makes you smile when you pass it, like, who doesn't need to?
And it's doing it. It's doing its job.
There's so much in this world not to smile about. Why not have something that's charming or idiosyncratic that just, you know, brings a smile to your face?
Hear, hear. So do you have a favorite creator, Tony?
I love antiques, I have to say. I am a big proponent of pieces more than 100 years old. I love old wicker pieces. I love things that have patina, maybe a little bit worn. I was telling someone the other day that I don't like things that are shiny or slick. For the most part, that doesn't mean I won't appreciate it and tell stories about that, the shiny and slick things we sell on First Dibs. But I think, you know, personally, I would gravitate more toward an old piece of, I mean, I love British arts and crafts pieces. I love Macintosh. Putting me on the spot, who, you know, who's my favorite baby?
It must be quite difficult also when you kind of, you're seeing so many pieces going past you every day. I mean, my problem is, if I'm doing up my own place, I just fall in love with everything and thinking, oh, I want this, I want this, I want this, you know.
Well, Carol, aren't we journalists because we're basically dilettantes and everything's sort of potentially interesting to us and we want to sort of learn more about it? So I'm like, everything.
I have the perfect job because I'm just nosy. I just want to nosy.
No. Yeah, well, that's also it gives you license to ask all sorts of questions. So this is why, yeah, I'm nervous every time you open your mouth here, what you're going to ask me next. I'm not used to being on this side. But I will say, yeah, I mean, it's a blessing, but it's also a curse, right? Because as you say, you're doing up your house. How do you decide what you want when you want everything? When you see, oh my God, yes, you know, this incredible piece made by, you know, this young woman in Brooklyn, you know, would be so great. But I also want the medieval chest, and I also want the mid-century modern, you know, the George Nakashima chaise lounge. And I want, you know, and how do we make it all work together?
Yeah. Well, that's where you need your interior designer.
Absolutely.
That's what I always say to people, use an interior designer because they will save you money at the end of the day.
Well, you were saying before about how designers were a godsend to designers. And I think we have been, you know, by making their life easier. But you might find a few designers will say that we've made their life more difficult because their clients will, you know, be emailing them in the middle of the night saying, you know, with things from links to things on First Dibs and say, you know, hey, why didn't you consider this and that? But I think, you know, ultimately, the designer's job is, they're not just creating pretty rooms. They really are curators. They really are decorative arts, you know, historians. Me, I mean, I'm in, you know, I'm pretty well versed in this stuff. And yet to do my own home, I would have to turn to someone because there are just so many choices. And I, you know it's beyond my ability to edit down. I mean, I think interior designers at the best are incredible editors and curators.
I agree. Here. Well, Tony, I hope I haven't made it too painful a process for you. Absolute delight to speak to you. Thank you very, very much for your time.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Absolute pleasure.
Thank you for joining me. If you'd like to have more interiors inspiration, take a look at countryandtownhouse.co.uk, where you can also sign up to our monthly online interiors newsletter. And if you're flying anywhere soon, you can also listen on British Airways In-Flight Entertainment.